Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for your patience. Calling the March 14th, 2025 meeting of the Arizona Board of Occupational Therapy Examiners to order at 1:38 p.m. Looking for our agenda, our next item of business is roll call.
There is still a significant delay and it's echoing.
Oh. And Mr. Daly, if you don't use your mic and just speak a bit louder, we'll try it that way.
It might be picking up the other microphone, the two microphones, to see if it's working. I had to change the sound settings to get it to stop echoing.
So. Understood. Are we still echoing, Sean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. On their end, they can hear us echo?
I can hear the echo.
It is. It's echoing.
Okay, I have to have this one on. I was testing that out to see if it. Can you hear us now?
Yes.
I can hear the male voice real well. It's the female voices that are being really far away and echoey. I don't know what that is.
Is it still happening?
That's better.
Better.
Okay, that's cool. Just leave it as it is. Shall we just start with this?
Sure. All right. Good afternoon again, everyone. Calling the March 14th, 2025 meeting of the Arizona Board of Occupational Therapy Examiners to order at 1:39 p.m. Our next item of business is roll call.
Christopher Daly.
Present.
John Williams.
Present.
Trevor Marks.
Present.
I'm putting it off. Present. Michael Forente?
Present.
Our AAG, Mark Harris?
Here.
Alara Selman?
Present.
And myself, Shana Ganatra, present.
All right, considering we have established a quorum, having all of the board members present today, our next item of business is agenda item 3, declaration of conflicts of interest. Do any board members have anything to declare at this time? Hearing no conflicts. Moving on to agenda item 4, discuss amend and approval of meeting minutes. We have agenda item 4.1, regular session meeting minutes of February 14th, 2025. Those meeting minutes have been previously distributed. Are there any corrections or discussion pertaining to those meeting minutes? Hearing no corrections or discussion, I move to approve the regular session meeting minutes of February 14th, 2025 as distributed.
This is Charlene Marks. I second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Christopher Daly.
Aye.
Sean Williams.
Aye.
Charlene Marks.
Aye.
Shelley Donald.
Aye.
Michael Corrente.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to agenda item 4.2, the amended regular session meeting minutes of July 19th, 2024. Those meetings have also been previously distributed. Those meeting minutes, any corrections or discussion pertaining to those meeting minutes? Hearing no corrections or discussion, I move to approve the amended regular session meeting minutes of July 19, 2024.
I second that.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Christopher Daly.
Aye.
Sean Williams.
Aye.
Charlene Marr.
Aye.
Shelley Donald.
Aye.
Michael Corrente.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to agenda item 5, call to the public. This is our allotted time for members of the public to address the board. Just a quick reminder that board staff or board members are not able to answer questions. We simply will listen to your statement, and if it is warranted, board staff will follow up with you after the meeting. Do we have any members of the public who wish to address the board?
Hi. I'm not sure if this is when I should speak up, but I have an application in. My name's Amanda Lazo for OT license in the state of Arizona. And there's been like an ongoing back and forth about something I disclosed within my application. Is now the time where I would bring that up, or is there a later time in the meeting for that?
Ms. Lazo, you're not on the agenda, so in a later time at this time, board staff can reach out, or you're welcome to discuss your question or concern. However, we cannot address you at the board meeting. We'd have to reach out to you after the board.
I was told that this was going to be on the agenda. That's why I got the invite to attend this meeting.
Okay, well, we will reach out to you outside of the meeting to discuss further. Thank you.
Sorry about that. Any members of the public wishing to address the board at this time?
This is Patrick Conway. I was told to attend the meeting too. I don't know if I'm supposed to speak now or what I'm supposed to do.
Mr. Conway, yes, you are on the agenda. Your matter will be addressed shortly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, hearing nothing additional, moving on to Gen Item 6, review, discussion, and possible action on future board meeting schedule. We have 6A, April 11th, 6B, May 9th, and 6C, June 13th, 2025. June is slated to be in person. Do any members of the board have any conflicts at this time? I do believe April 11th was noted as a conflict last meeting for Shelly and Mike.
Still a conflict.
Mr. Corinthia, is that still a conflict for you?
This is still a conflict for me, yes.
Thank you.
Board members, if we might be able to nail down a date at this meeting, that might be helpful.
Mm-hmm. I'm fine with another Friday. The 4th, it's been closed, but the 18th, and I'm also here the 25th.
Yeah, I'm free any other Friday in April as well.
Is the
available for all? Okay. Yes. Then we will make it.
Okay. Thank you. If we can please make a motion for the change of date.
Okay. Mr. Daly, I'd like to make a motion that we change the date of our April 11th, 2025 board meeting to April 25th, 2025.
Awesome. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Christopher Daly?
Aye.
Sean Williams?
Aye.
Charlene Marth?
Aye.
Shelley Donald?
Aye.
Michael Corrente?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, everyone. Moving on to agenda item 7, review, consideration, and possible action, complaints, investigations, and compliance. We have the matter of 7A1, Rihanna Paxton Collins. Is Ms. Collins with us today?
I am present.
Thank you so much, Ms. Collins. I will just give a very brief overview and give you an opportunity to address the board if you so choose. But just in very brief summary, there was a complaint filed on October 28th, 2024 from Ms. Collins' previous employer that alleges false billing and inaccurate documentation as well as asking clients to make false statements regarding the stated incidents. Ms. Collins did provide numerous letters of support from various clients, including recommendations, as well as a written statement pertaining to the incident. And just to level set, do we also have the applicant in attendance?
Mr. Daly, the complainant was invited, however, did not speak.
Thank you, Ms. Sinatra. Ms. Collins, would you like to address the board and expand upon any of that or provide us with additional information or a statement?
Well, I don't have anything additional other than what was in my statement. I do want to apologize for my actions and that it was very wrong. I was just in a unique circumstance and there is no excuses.
Thank you, Ms. Collins. Any questions? Yes.
I do have a question. Ms. Collins, thank you for being online. You mentioned being in a unique circumstance, and I also got to review all the letters of commendation from your clients. Could you give us more information about your unique circumstance that caused you to seem to go outside of your character in this particular instance?
Yes. So I was just in a financial situation at the time. And when that was offered, I took it, and I should not have taken that and agreed upon to that.
I'm not clear. This is Shelley. I'm not clear. You're offered what?
I'm so sorry. So just when they had said, you know, why don't we just go ahead and mark that we had this session and then we will go back and do it Wednesday. And I obliged and I said yes, and I should not have done that. Am I making sense? I'm sorry.
I can't say that's making sense to me.
I don't know who we is or are, and okay. if this was a recession. I think we're still unclear.
Okay, I will be more clear. So the clients had offered, mark us present, and we will make it up at a later date. I obliged. As the therapist, as the professional, did that. And I am taking fully responsibility. Am I being more clear?
Can you just kind of run through what exactly happened? So to me, what I read was there was a family that you were treating and they had multiple children. Can you kind of just lead up to what happened?
Okay. So this happened on September 22nd, I believe. And because I was having financial hardship, they had offered, why don't we mark the session as present? We will make it up the following Wednesday. I said, yes, let's go ahead and do that, which was wrong. I had marked them present when the session did not occur.
And did you not practice at that session to do something else that day and time?
I'm sorry, ask the question one more time.
Did you, in lieu of doing that session, did you do something else to help you financially during that date and time? Because you keep saying you were in a financial situation. So I'm trying to understand the tie-in between the two. So was there something else you did that day and time when you should have been treating the patient?
In other words, Ms. Collins, were you, during that day where you kind of marked down, you were doing those sessions, were you engaged in another work type activity, making additional
money? Oh, I see. Okay, I'm understanding. I'm sorry, I just was not understanding. No, I was actually in California to attend a funeral, and I wasn't able to do the time because at the time it was a time difference and I had a flight, excuse me, and that is why.
Was this virtual?
Yes, ma'am.
And you were in California at the time?
On my way to.
On your way to California. Okay.
So you mentioned that you had financial difficulty and that factored into you not doing the session, and you were on your way to a funeral that day?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And Ms. Collins, is that something that just happened that one time, or were there numerous instances of falsifying documents?
It was just that one time, sir.
And did you write a session note? Or I'm assuming you billed for this or marked it as, I won't say that, you marked it as attended, but did you actually write a session note, or how is this all kind of tied together?
So from what I remember, the billing did not go through. I had come forward before the billing had passed through.
So you self-reported?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, just to kind of put this in context, this is another sort of initial review.
Okay.
And if you can ask as many questions as you need to decide next steps. And the next steps would be to, either, to go actually, dismiss it, or if you think there may be something there, you probably want to invite her in for an informal interview. In those situations, she's under oath, she's providing testimony, and you're then, at the conclusion of that, have the ability to either, dismiss it if it's appropriate, or any other disciplinary action available to you under your statutes, which is, in essence, anything but suspension or revocation that would require a formal hearing. So just to kind of put where we are in context, because there may be some more action that you want to take.
Mr. Chair, I feel like with the complainant not being here, that leaves a gap in the situation. So I would like to make a motion that we open a formal, that we request an informal hearing.
That's one option that's available to you. Yeah.
That we do an informal hearing, invite the complainant to attend, and also I feel like we need verification that this was the only incident and there were no other sessions in question.
Summarize.
Yes.
What I'm hearing is the motion is to invite the licensee in for an informal meeting.
Yes.
And to direct staff to confirm or to obtain additional information regarding whether this was an isolated billing situation or if there were other incidents of this type of and have that available to you for that informal meeting. We would also need to give the licensee an opportunity to respond if we do find additional instances.
Yeah.
And you would want that information, of course, before too, in your preparation. So I said a lot of words. The gist of it is you want to invite in for an informal meeting at the Juro staff and see if there's additional incidents in this building.
Yes, and invite the complaint in as well.
Thank you. Shall I re-summarize then? So moved and seconded.
Mr. Daly, was there a second?
Yes.
Moved and seconded to invite Ms. Collins to an informal hearing, as well as invite the complainants and direct board staff to request any other related clinical documents or information pertaining to anything regarding falsifying clinical documentation. This pertains to violation of ARS 32-34110X for unprofessional conduct, falsifying client documents or reports. All in favor?
Christopher Daly.
Aye.
Sean Williams.
Aye.
Shirley Marks.
Aye.
Shirley Donald.
Aye.
Michael Carrente.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you so much, Ms. Collins, for being here with us today. Do you have any questions for us at this time?
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is there is going to be another informal hearing, which I will be invited to via email. Is that correct?
Ms. Saxon-Collins, it's the first time they're doing an informal. This is just an initial review.
Yes.
They formally notify prior to the board meeting, which will request your attendance too.
Okay, I will be on the lookout for that invitation.
Fantastic, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, moving on to agenda item 7A, to the matter of Rebecca Sorensen. Is Ms. Sorensen here with us today?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Sorensen. I'll just give a quick recap. So this matter was a complaint opened by the board at the December 2024 meeting for practicing without a license, a violation of ARS 32-34110Z. Ms. Sorensen practiced for approximately 17 days without a license. And I think we did chat about this quite a bit at the last meeting, but Ms. Sorensen, just wanted to give you an opportunity to address the board or expand on anything at this time.
No, I think I have put everything in writing more than once, and it was not purposeful. It was a lapse.
Mr. Daly, our core investigator, has a bit of a summary she can provide to this as well. Ms. Salmon, if I can pass it over to you.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. The complaint involving Ms. Sorensen was opened up by the board on December 13th, and the board members had voted to open the complaint against Ms. Sorensen for violation of ARS 32-34110Z. So that's what we're reviewing in today.
Thank you, Ms. Salmon.
You're welcome.
Any questions or discussion from board members? Hearing no questions or discussion, I move to dismiss the complaint against Ms. Sorensen regarding violation of ARS 32-34110Z, practicing without a license with issuance of a non-disciplinary letter of concern.
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Christopher Daly.
Aye.
Sean Williams.
Aye.
Shirley Marks.
Aye.
Shelley Donald.
Aye.
Michael Carrente.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you so much, Ms. Sorensen, for your time and patience with us. We appreciate your cooperation. Any questions for us at this time?
No, thank you so much.
Thanks again. Take care.
Bye.
All right, moving on to agenda item 7B, review, discussion, and possible action of whether or not to open the complaint. We have none.
Item 7C, review, discussion, and possible action on self-disclosure of actions. We have the matter of 7C1, Mr. Patrick Conway, and I know Mr. Conway is here with us today. In very brief summary, this matter is continued from our January 2025 board meeting. It's a charge of disorderly conduct. The matter was continued in order to provide the police report, probation requirements, and any updates on the fingerprint clearance card. Mr. Conway provided the police report as well as a detailed statement and indicated that his level one fingerprint clearance card is not at risk in this situation. Mr. Conway, would you like to address the board and add anything or expand upon anything related to the situation?
Sure. Thank you for letting me be here. I hope, I guess, I would really like to ask the board to see this situation as a kind of how the judge has seen it, how my counselor has seen it, who I've had to go to be part of the probation, as my probation officer sees it, and my attorney sees it, which is this is a one-off incident that is not a defining moment of my character whatsoever. I was put into a bad situation, and it was an act of self-defense. And, one interesting thing about my courses that I have to take is that the difference between fear and anger is, even though they look the same in the brain as far as they light up the same place, what the difference is the behavior. And the person who is exhibiting anger will approach, whereas the person exhibiting fear will turn and leave. And that's exactly what I did. I de-escalated the situation as much as I could, turned twice to get away from them. And it was only because they were the ones that called the police that I was the one that was in trouble. And again, I also volunteered to accept a plea deal because I wasn't willing to take a risk and leave my family and my loved ones. So I chose to take the plea agreement, even though it was against my attorney's best judgment because he thought he could win the case. But I just hope that the board can understand that this is a very unfortunate situation that I found myself in. This is not something that's my character whatsoever. I had four men approaching me and threatening me. It was a very uncomfortable place for me to be, and I hope I never have to live through that again. But that's all I really have to say at this time, I think.
I have questions for you, Mr. Conway. This is Sean.
Absolutely.
It said in the charges that it was the description was recklessly hand discharge weapon times two. Did they? What was that? Did you discharge the weapon?
You said absolutely you not. Do I? Yeah, absolutely not. That all was actually dropped from the case. And because the judge, none of that happened. All I did was I picked up my firearm because it slid forward underneath my seat. They looked in my window as they were approaching my vehicle and saw that. The discharge, I never point. It even says in the police report, it says I never aimed it at them, never pointed it at them. Nothing like that ever happened. It was just that's the part of the title or the words that they used in the description. But there was no recklessness that was dropped, and there was no pointing or anything like that whatsoever. Even the dangerous was dropped from the charges.
Did you get your fingerprint clearance card granted with a good clause or anything at this time?
Say that again.
Were you able to get your fingerprint clearance card cleared?
Oh, I have my fingerprint clearance card right now, and they have not sent anything to me. And then I went, like I said last time, the last meeting, I've gone through all of their statutes, and nothing says anything about this. And my attorney was kind of surprised because he said that other professionals or other fingerprint clearance cards, like they'll call you right away, and I have not received anything from them regarding my fingerprint clearance card. And then again, all the statutes that I read through on their website stating things that would take my card away from me. This is not listed as one of them. Okay. That's as much information that I have on it.
I know part of the some of the issues that we had last time was, you know, and mindfully, I know you're in a different state of mind in the moment. But you know, taking a plea deal of admitting to something that you did not do was the hard part for us to process, because you know, if you did not fire it in that too. My question was for you is like, why would you take a plea deal saying that you are admitting right. that you did something wrong if you really honestly don't feel like you did something wrong?
Well, yeah, good question. And now in hindsight, I do question my judgment, and I'm agreeing to that. I think fear was the thing that was scaring me the most. This is something I've never entered into before. I've never been, you know, I've never had anything like this happen. So I was extremely scared, and to look at my charges about what, you know, was coming against me, and then talking to my attorney, who, you know, he felt very confident that I was going to win, that he was going to win the case. But he also said in that same sentence that, you know, he's like, if I have a bad day and the jury decides that you are in the wrong, I go home to my nice house and you go to prison. And I was like, I am not willing to take that risk. I'm not willing to have you have a bad day. When they're offering me a plea to go to probation, I'm just going to stay home with my family. I'll take the plea. I'll, you know, and at least I'm safe and I'm home, and I'm not running the risk of going to prison. I just didn't feel like I wanted to risk the chance of 12 other people making my fate for me. And so I chose to take the plea. And now I kind of regret that. I feel like I should have just fought for it, but it's what I did at the time. And it all happened so fast. I didn't even know that was going to happen that day in the courtroom. It was supposed to be another hearing, and all of a sudden my attorney's running around and he's yelling things in my ear, and he's like, all right, let's just do this now. And I'm like, and it all just happened. And I really wasn't even prepared for the plea to occur that day, or for me to accept the plea that day. But that's how it happened. So yes, I was kind of on my heels. I was off balance. And again, I was not willing to risk the potential of going to and getting in trouble for this was not worth my risk. I mean, I'd rather be at home with my family than run the risk and be in prison for however many months.
So are you aware that in the police or in this, I believe the report I'm looking at states mm-hmm. that you did a little bit more than just had it. It says that you cocked it after.
That's not true. There's a few things in that police report that those gentlemen said that were not true. But that's what the report says. So, I mean, I can't change what they said. They were the ones who said that I cocked it. That's not true. I didn't do that at all. Didn't point it at them. Didn't do anything like that. They're the ones that threw the ball at my vehicle. I stopped to get out to see if there was any damage. They threatened me. Four men actually threatened me. Two of them were only on the complaint. And I turned and got in my vehicle. And they saw me have my firearm in my hand. I drove away. And that was the end of that. I thought it was over. But they ended up calling the police. Good. I was not. Go ahead.
No. Please finish. Okay. Actually, this is Shelley Donald. I'd like to make a motion to go into executive session for the board advice, please.
This is Charlie Marks. I second.
Moved and seconded to go into executive session for legal advice. All in favor.
Christopher Daly.
Aye.
Sean Williams.
Aye.
Charlie Marks.
Aye.
Shelley Donald.
Aye.
Michael Corrente.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Leaving general session at 2:11 p.m.
Just a reminder, board members will exit out of this room to the room across the executive session. And for those on the call, there is no side conversations, and those in the room as well. Ms. Salmon will be monitoring.
Understood. Thank you.
Hello. Hello.
Sir, they're going into executive session. You cannot speak at this time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't understand.
Thank you.
The board is on mute.
Can you hear us now?
There we go.
Okay. Thank you. You're all set.
Thank you, Ms. Gannon, for returning to open session at 2:27 p.m. Are there any additional questions for Mr. Conway?
This is Sean. Mr. Conway.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. So we're not trying to necessarily, it's not our decision as far as the court case goes. I think my concerns and my questions were just, you know, the character is what we're looking at too. Just making sure that there's honesty and things like, you know, in alignment. So that's why I was asking some of the questions, because the police report did indicate that there was a chain, there was a round found in the chamber, which we know can only happen if you did cock the gun, which is what one of the persons reported in the report. So I was asking questions just to, you know, looking at that. I mean, you made a mistake in your eyes from what you were saying. Right. And the idea is, would you do it again? Not knowing the ramifications, I pretty much would say, based on your comments, that you would not. However, you know, I think the issue is, I just wanted to make sure you understood that. That's why I was asking questions, to make sure that we just could understand the full picture of what was happening in this case.
Sure. And yeah, that's fine. And to be honest with you, I carry one chambered all the time, which is why it also, so that would be the defense that I didn't cock the gun, because there's one in the chamber. That's how it's how my firearm is carried. So that explains that.
Okay. And just so you know, I mean, we all understand your situation, and, you know, the law is the law. You're allowed to carry. So that's not an issue. Yes, that's not an issue that we were ever debating.
Okay.
So I would like to make a motion if that's okay.
Yes, Dr. Williams.
I would like to make a motion to not open a complaint on this matter, and to grant Mr. Conway, this is a licensure, without any further review.
Mr. Williams, I apologize. This is a self-disclosure, so he's not an application. He's just in between a renewal.
Okay. Well, I would make a motion to not make any further issues out of the case, and to approve his renewal for licensure.
Mr. Williams, he doesn't have a renewal. He's in between a renewal period, so he is just self-disclosing.
Okay.
Just to the board at this time, but there's no application.
Okay, so we don't have to, we can not open up a complaint.
Yeah, if you're looking to not take action or open up a complaint, you can state it as such.
Okay, so I would make a motion not to take action for and open a complaint on this matter.
And may I add to Mr. Williams' motion and to have staff confirm there's a fingerprint clearance?
I can certainly send you my fingerprint clearance card.
Oh, that's okay. The staff will confirm it.
Okay.
I do second that motion.
Mr. Williams, are you okay with that modified motion?
I am.
Okay.
I'll restate. So moved and seconded to take no action on this disclosure, subject to board staff confirmation of a valid level one fingerprint clearance card. All in favor?
Christopher Daly?
Aye.
Sean Williams?
Aye.
Charlene Mars?
Aye.
Shelley Donald?
Aye.
Michael Carranti?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you so much, Mr. Conway, for your time with us and your patience going through the process. We would like, if okay with you, if you just kind of keep the board updated on your full completion of probation and how that all plays out.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. We really would appreciate that. And again, we really appreciate your time. And I know this has been a really tough situation for you, so wish you all the best.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, moving on then to agenda item 7C2, the matter of Sharon Pacheco. Is Ms. Pacheco here with us today?
I am here. This is Sharon Pacheco.
Thank you so much, Ms. Pacheco, for joining us. And I'll just in very brief summary, this matter was continued from our November board meeting. It was a self-disclosure regarding an arrest in September of 2024 for domestic violence. At the time of the November meeting, it was thoroughly discussed, and Ms. Pacheco provided all legal documents and written statements and was very forthcoming with the board. We did continue the matter. Bear with me 1 second here. Oh, I'm so sorry. So at that time, the board opened a complaint for not having a valid level one fingerprint clearance card and offered Ms. Pacheco a consent agreement for the interim suspension of her occupational therapy license in the interim while she was waiting for her good cause exception application to be approved. And Ms. Pacheco now has been granted a good cause exception for a level one fingerprint clearance card. She provided a letter demonstrating compliance with her diversion program, completing domestic violence counseling. Ms. Pacheco, just in case I missed anything, is there anything you would like to add or expand upon at this time?
If I may, Mr. Daly, board members, Ms. Pacheco was awaiting her interim consent agreement, and in that time frame, she was granted her fingerprint clearance card. So she did not sign the interim consent agreement because it was not offered to her. In that period of time, we decided to bring it back to the board.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Sinatra. Ms. Pacheco, would you like to address the board at this time?
Yes. As you said, that was an accurate synopsis of everything that's happened. It was an argument that I had with my daughter, and the neighbor called the police, and I was arrested for the first time in my life. But I did complete all the diversion classes. I was able to participate in my own individual counseling. I am now working on getting this case sealed through the courts with the help of my defense attorney. And my fingerprint clearance card was granted on February 14th. Diversion classes were completed within that week as well. So I'm just requesting for my OT license and my fingerprint license to go back into status quo so that I can continue to work in the school system.
Thank you so much, Ms. Pacheco.
Mr. Chair, board members, Ms. Pacheco, can you confirm if you were not practicing during this period of time?
You mean after the event, after my incident of getting arrested?
After the board meeting.
No, ma'am, I have not been practicing. I was told at the last board meeting that I was not allowed to, and so I haven't. But I do have a fingerprint clearance card through the state of Arizona to practice for private investigation services. My husband owns a PI company, so I fortunately have been able to earn, you know, make money and pay for my bills as a PI. And so I have not been practicing as an occupational therapist to the school. However, I have been in contact, close contact with HR, and as soon as I can get everything cleared back up, they're going to bring me back on.
Thank you for confirming.
Mm-hmm. I just have a question. Would this be considered a restatement, or what's a?
Ms. Pacheco is a self-disclosure. She disclosed to us the matter, and so she's in between a renewal period. Gotcha. Since there is no application to review, it's just the matter itself of the disclosure. So whether or not to take action, the board did take action previously. However, this will need to be rescinded, and that's something the board wishes to move forward with. And then to decide whether or not to pursue anything further or to rescind the consent agreement.
The previous motion to offer a consent agreement, and in its place, one option is, as Ms. Pacheco just said, is to take no action. Was there a complaint open?
There was a complaint open in order to, and I think at the same time, the board closed it with an interim consent agreement or issued the interim control.
I have the motion if you guys. From the last.
Yeah.
So the motion from that board meeting was to open a complaint against Ms. Pacheco regarding the self-disclosure and the fact that she didn't possess a valid level one fingerprint clearance card, as well as offer her an interim consent agreement to cease OT practice and suspend current OT licensure until able to return to the board with the final outcome of the fingerprint clearance card, good cause exception application, and all legal matters are officially resolved.
Thank you. So if you wanted, then the motion could be to rescind that motion. And again, once you do that, you have your bundle of options available. One of them would be to open up a complaint, and you would need to if you wanted to take action. But if you didn't think this rose to the level of taking any action, you would just indicate the motion to rescind the previous motion and take no action in this case.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make the motion.
Yes, Ms. Marks.
To post the complaints, rescind the previous interim consent agreement, and take no action at this time against the license of Ms. Pacheco.
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Christopher Daly.
Aye.
Sean Williams.
Aye.
Charlene Marks.
Aye.
Shelley Donald.
Aye.
Michael Ferrante.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you so much, Ms. Pacheco. We really appreciate your due diligence and hanging in there with us. We wish you all the best.
Thank you. And can I just have clarification of what was decided?
Sure. Ms. Pacheco, so there is no action taken against you or your license.
Wonderful.
Can proceed as usual with your license.
So I can start practicing and working now.
Yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And just to clarify, was my license an actual suspension during that between the first board meeting and the second one?
No, ma'am. No, because we did not offer you the interim consent agreement because you did get approved for the fingerprint card to be brought up before the board.
Okay. So. Wonderful. Okay. But I'm legal now to practice and everything's fine.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much. And am I allowed to leave this meeting?
You are welcome. Yes. You
can. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, moving on. I do believe we're up to agenda item 8. Mm-hmm. Review, consideration, and possible action on applications for licensure. 8A, initial applications. We have the matter of 8A1, Lisa Bland. Initial disclosure. Is Ms. Bland here with us today?
Yes.
Hi, Ms. Bland. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Ms. Bland, if we can offer you to just come to the...
Sure. To the can I bring my notes if I need them? I don't know that I'll sit here.
Yes,
please. Like I'm at a Senate hearing?
Yeah.
Very good.
I would much rather be here. Believe me.
Ms. Bland, I'll just give a quick overview and then give you an opportunity to address the board if you so choose.
Sure.
So, Ms. Bland, on 12/31/24, submitted an application for licensure by examination. During that process, board staff discovered that she did not disclose all other states where she held an OTA license.
Mm-hmm.
On February 24th, 2025, Ms. Bland informed the board that she previously held prior licenses in Texas and Kansas. Mm-hmm. It was discovered the Texas license had action against it on July 23rd, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And that case was discussed at the September 2010 Texas OT board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And Ms. Bland, if you don't mind, if you could fill us in on that, I'll just make the other statement that Ms. Bland was previously licensed in Arizona since 2010, and her previous Arizona OTA license expired in June of 2022. So she was licensed in Arizona after that 2010 incident.
If I may add, Mr. Chair, board members, Ms. Bland was on a previous agenda. However, there was no indication of what was heard or seen at that meeting. I believe it was back here many years ago. So just to inform, we don't have no record.
It was this, going through all of this. that we're going to go through right now.
Yeah.
Wow. So this is a repeat.
Well, if it is, Ms. Glenn, we had asked for any documentation on your end to demonstrate that, but we hadn't received anything new to demonstrate it was seen or heard at the meeting. And the board doesn't have any record of it, just that you were seen at the meeting. So.
Okay.
Ms. Glenn, would you mind just recapping for us?
Yes. And first of all, thank you for having me here. Like I said, I've been licensed. My NBCOT is current and in good standing, and it has been since 1998. I'm an old program. Okay. Been around a long time. Texas, I'm just going to get to the meat and potatoes of this. Texas was a one-off. Texas was a retaliatory, need some speech help, act by the employer. The employer asked me to bill for home health pediatric patients that I had scheduled, gone to the home, and the client was not there. They did not answer the door. At the Texas, well, let me back up. Get my thoughts here. This is very triggering for me, and I typically don't like that word, but it is. It's extremely upsetting. I almost left the profession because of this, right? And I know you've heard these stories before. You hear stories all the time. Unfortunately, it does happen. I saw it in my career. I saw it as a treating therapist and even as a director of rehab. HealthSouth asked me to have my staff do billing that was fraudulent and unethical, and I refused to do it. And I will continue to refuse to do that. In a nutshell, I documented. I am anal retentive. Can I just say it about documentation? I come from a family of English teachers and attorneys, and they have genetically coded me for that, which is not always a good thing. The musicians are the ones I kind of like better, if you want to know the truth. But anyway, I was asked to bill for services that were not rendered, despite those services being scheduled as confirmed with the family. Well, life may have happened with the family, and they weren't there. And I documented this in my documentation. The owner became very, very mad. It was like working for a dictator. This was a travel assignment in Austin, Texas. And I was asked, bill for the service anyway. I flat out refused. I said, no, I will not do that. And she said, well, on your next home health visits, if you have clients that aren't there, you're to bill anyway. That's what you're to do. I said, I'm not going to do that. I immediately let my OTR know. I immediately showed my OTR my documentation. And because of the horrible working conditions, I left the job without notice. Have I ever done that before? No, I have not. In a retaliatory action, the owner of the clinic contacted the Nexus OT board, and under the regs, said I committed abandonment. I went before the board. I went through all this. I provided copies of my documentation, which my OTR had to get me because the owner wasn't going to give them to me. And the OTR made the owner aware, well, we have to have these for the Texas board. It was a nightmare. The net, it was an absolute horrific nightmare. On a personal note, at the same time, I lost my father to a massive heart attack. 3 weeks later, I lost my uncle, who was a licensed clinical social worker for Catholic Services out of Cleveland, Ohio, to a brain aneurysm. And to top it off, you may not need to know this, but it's important to me, I was going through a horrible divorce with a 10-year-old daughter. So this was a horrible time in my life, and it is still haunting me. I assumed, another one of my favorite words, that because I was renewing my license or reactivating my license in the state of Arizona, that you guys had all of that data. I take ownership for whatever my error was. As was shared, when I initially started to renew, I'm not a brand new therapist. I've had my NBCOT. It didn't even occur to me, again, I take responsibility, that I was submitting application as a brand new therapist. I was trying to renew it. Does it say on the Arizona website that if it has expired, you have to? Yes, it does. Did I go back and check all this? Yes, I did. So I take ownership for that. It wasn't a nefarious act on my part. Ooh, I'm not going to tell you. Because I have been through this for the third time. Well, probably the fourth. I had to go through it in California. I was licensed in California in 2010 after this Texas. So this is like the gift that just keeps on giving, me gray hair, okay? Why? Just so you know, a personal note, did my license expire this time? I have a 40-year-old daughter that was trying to get pregnant. She's a dean of the International School of Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Her husband is over there. She was trying to get pregnant. She went through two miscarriages. I went over there to help her. They finally got pregnant. I have beautiful 15-month-old healthy twin grandbabies. And while I was on back and forth, my 89-year-old mother had a stroke. Thank God, while I was home visiting, you couldn't make this stuff up, right? I mean, that sounds like a soap opera. But I happen to be there when my mom has a stroke. Thank God. So in all this stuff of life, I let my Arizona license expire. I didn't know if I was going to have to be a full-time caregiver for my mother. My brother has since moved from New York City. He is here. He is helping. We have home health care. La, 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 la. You know the deal. Happening. My daughter and son-in-law, the babies are healthy. Mommy is healthy. Thank you, greater power, whoever sits up there. They have a wonderful nanny. And I need to go back to work. So that's it. That's the story. Yes. And I thank you for your time. I thank you for my litany of information and allowing me to share.
Thank you so much. Yes, thank you so much, Ms. Glenn. And I do hope my colleagues agree with me that I don't want you to put you through this for another second. And I move to take no action on this disclosure and approve the initial licensure application for Ms. Glenn.
Namaste.
Seconded.
Moved and seconded. All in favor.
Very much, really. Thank you.
Christopher Daly.
Aye.
Sean Williams.
I have to recuse myself from this due to conflict of interest.
Oh, okay. Mr. Williams, can you please provide me with a recusal form after the meeting?
You bet. I just realized.
Okay.
He realized who I am.
Yes.
Years ago.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sean.
Oh, goodness.
Sorry.
Plan. Thank you. We're in the middle of a motion. Charlene Marks?
Aye.
Shelley Donald?
Aye.
Michael Carenti?
Aye.
Motion passes by majority. Thank you so much, Ms. Glenn. We really appreciate your time today and
thank
wish
you
all the best.
Thank you very much. And again, I take ownership for my goofs, you know, and I just appreciate you allowing me to be here. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
When will I know, my employer, potential employer, texted me this morning, when will I get my new number? Because Arizona changes the number. You're like, when will I get that?
Correct. Fine. So the board did vote to approve your license. So if you allow the board member, excuse me, the board staff, a few business days to get your license approved.
Sure.
And you'll get an email. And sure. It'll allow you to log back into the licensing portal.
Yes. Yeah,
that's your information.
Right.
Yes.
Got it. Thank you guys for your time.
All the best.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Very much.
Thank
you.
Good luck, Lisa.
Thank you, Sean. It's nice to hear your voice again. Can I leave now? Or yes. You don't need me anymore, right? No. Okay.
Thank you.
That's not a compliment.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
All right, moving on to agenda item 8A2, the matter of Teresa Bowen. Initial disclosure. Is Ms. Bowen here with us today?
Hi, yes, I am.
Thank you so much for joining us. Ms. Bowen, I will just give a very brief summary and allow you an opportunity to address the board if you so choose. But this was initial disclosure. February 25th, 2025, Ms. Bowen submitted an application for initial licensure by examination and disclosed a 2012 DUI. She provided all legal documents, written statement, and any relevant information that was available regarding the disclosure. Ms. Bowen, would you like to add to that or expand upon anything at this time?
Yes, I unfortunately don't have the court documents. I did provide the completion of the alcohol class that I was required to attend. I do have my driver's license was reinstated in Virginia. I did move to Florida and I do have my driver's license now. The incident did not interfere with my ability to perform my job as an occupational therapist. And I have not had any issues since. But if you have any questions of me, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you so much, Ms. Bowen. Really appreciate that. Any questions from board members? Hearing no questions or discussion, I would feel very comfortable moving to take no action on this disclosure and approve the initial licensure application for Ms. Bowen.
Thank you so much.
This is Charlene Marks. I second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Christopher Daly.
Aye.
Sean Williams.
Aye.
Charlene Marks.
Aye.
Shelley Donald.
Aye.
Michael Corrente.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you again, Ms. Bowen. We really appreciate your time with us today and wish you all the best of luck in Arizona.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, moving on to agenda item 8B, renewal reinstatement applications, board review. We have the matter of 8B1, Ms. Julianne Bird. Is Ms. Bird here with us today?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Bird. I will just give a quick summary of your matter and give you an opportunity to address the board if you so choose. But I think as board members saw from our board packet, Ms. Bird with a renewal application disclosed being involved in litigation, received a formal complaint notice from Arizona Superior Court pertaining to a patient incident in 2023, trial date pending. And just for clarification, this was an incident related to client injury and has no implications of any malfeasance or anything of that nature against Ms. Bird. Ms. Bird, would you like to expand upon that or address the board at this time?
Yes, thank you. You know, this obviously is my first incident that I've ever received. I've held a license with the board now for 33 years. So to receive that sort of thing was, you know, very upsetting to me. I will say that I was working in my scope, you know, of practice at the time. I was following patient rights and permitted the patient upon her request to be unsupervised in the bathroom. I was standing outside the door waiting for her to summons me. And of course she had the call light also. And she chose not to do that and stood up and fell and then became injured.
Thank you so much, Ms. Bird. We appreciate your clarification. Any questions at all from board members?
I have a question for you. Mrs. Bird, when this incident occurred, did you know that there was going to be any type of litigation, or is this they just came in December?
Yeah, so the incident happened in April of 2023. So I had no idea that they were thinking about this. They made no indication that, you know, or no accusatory statements at the time that would lead me to believe that they were considering this.
Okay. And the lawsuit is against the facility, not yourself.
It's against the facility and myself, and the facility has since dissolved. So I don't know how they responded to the claim. I know they've had other lawsuits against them, and they've defaulted on all of them. So I think in the end, this is just going to come down to me.
And I do think it's important to note that Ms. Bird has certainly not been charged with anything. She's just wrapped up in litigation.
That's correct.
Any additional questions? Hearing no additional questions or discussion, I would feel very comfortable making a motion to take no action on this disclosure and approve the renewal application of Ms. Bird.
I second that motion.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Christopher Daly.
Aye.
Sean Williams.
Aye.
Charlene Marks.
Aye.
Shelley Donald.
Aye.
Michael Carrancia.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you so much, Ms. Bird, for your time with us today, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, moving on then to, we're up to agenda item 9, consent agenda and possible action on applications for licensure by the executive director. We have items 9A, initial, there are 38 initial applications, 9B, 141 renewal applications, and 9C, 4 reinstatement applications, all approved by the executive director. I move to ratify the 38 initial, 141 renewal, and 4 reinstatement applications that have been approved by the executive director. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Christopher Daly.
Aye.
Sean Williams.
Aye.
Charlene Marks.
Aye.
Shelley Donald.
Aye.
Michael Carrancia.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to agenda item 10, review, consideration, and possible action, board business and reports with Ms. Ganatra.
Thank you, Mr. Daly. So the first item is 10A, which is artificial intelligence and the impact on occupational therapy practice. A few meetings ago, the board members had requested to receive more information in regards to AI in the OT field. And Ms. Heidi Carpenter with the Arizona Association kindly is providing her time to present on the matter. So, Ms. Carpenter, are you on the call?
Everybody, yes, I'm here today.
Thank you very much. Feel free if you need to present or if you'd just like to discuss, let me know.
Okay, I'm gonna just start with discussion. I do have one, you know, type of activity that might be of interest. So I appreciate your time today, and you know, please feel free to guide this discussion as you see fit, because this is for all of our learning, right? So I initially started picking up on AI and how it can be used in an educational setting. I'm at Huntington University over in Peoria in our OTD program, and as a university, we have embraced, you know, different types of Gen AI like ChatGPT, Microsoft Copilot. It seems pretty, it's infiltrating everything, right? And so it's really coming into a way that we need to pay attention and, you know, be proactive rather than reactive about it. And, you know, there are a lot of pros, a lot of cons, a lot of unknowns. And I even watched that Netflix documentary that the creators of OpenAI did with Bill Gates. And they even admitted, well, when you really peel away all of the layers, we still don't know how it works at the core. So that's a little interesting. So when it comes to healthcare, particularly in OT practice, I think it would probably be most beneficial to start talking about how it is being used in practice and how it can potentially be used in practice. Now, with physicians, physicians have been using things like ambient scribing for years. And so the two ways we see ambient scribing when a physician or a healthcare practitioner is with a patient is it's either completely auto-generating the transcript, which is usually the more economical model. The second is where they partner with a firm or a company, and it's more white glove concierge, where there's a human that gets the transcript, knows how the physician wants their notes transcribed in the medical record, and then sends the note back to the physician before they officially sign off on it. So ambient transcription is pretty, you know, it's so we see it now with like Commure is one that I have seen more market towards soap notes. There's also actually a company called Heidi AI. So these are HIPAA compliant platforms that are being used because, of course, we wouldn't ever want to have data exchanged over a non-HIPAA compliant platform. Physicians have access to a lot of other companies and platforms, but maybe aren't quite geared toward the therapy realm just yet. There's also usually a little bit more money to be paid toward that. An area where Gen AI has really taken off is with looking at pathology, right, like radiology reports and detecting cancer. So they are now, you know, studies are coming out constantly how it's just as good, if not better, than humans at detecting cancer, and they can do it all night long. They don't need to take a break. So they can run 24 hours a day. So the one maybe area of concern that would be worthy of discussion is how OT practitioners are going to be using it in practice. Do you all have access to a screen?
Ms. Carpenter, we don't at this time.
Okay. I just, so I guess the other piece I wanted to just mention is, so ChatGPT everywhere on your phone, on your computer, whatnot. So OpenAI is the platform. So if you already know this, kudos, but any GPT is built on an LLM, so a large language model. So this is both an opportunity and potentially a threat for occupational therapy, because if you build your own occupational therapy LLM, GPT, you can essentially feed it every single article in occupational therapy that's ever been written, right? So you could then have it be pulling from not just the internet where it's scraping from unknown sources, but scraping from only sources that you have curated. And so this could be tremendously powerful for clinician-assisted decision-making, for generating notes if it is HIPAA compliant and you can have all of your patient information in there. Again, physicians are doing similar technology. But what I did, non-HIPAA compliant, I have the paid version of ChatGPT. And so I made a GPT that's just focused on occupational therapy. So I put in the OTPF, the way I like to document very generically. And so I can sit there or I can upload articles and I can ask with ChatGPT, I can have it synthesize different scenarios for me. And so this customization of using this Gen AI can be a real, talking about it in terms of productivity, it kind of speeds ahead the work that has to get done, like the notes, so we can like kind of get back to the human tasks of OT practitioner work, which is how you'll hear other healthcare practitioners talk about it as well. So thoughts, questions?
I want to say thank you because I'm not at OT. So thank you for sharing that with us. And I really appreciate it. Very insightful.
Okay. Yeah.
Dr. Carpenter, have you noticed in academics, have students been abusing this sort of artificial intelligence in terms of generating research papers and things of the like?
Oh, that's another thing that I wanted to mention is that it will. So the hallucinations, so they're getting better at it, but ChatGPT will make up things, like it'll make up articles that don't exist. AI has even figured out how to go on Amazon and self-publish AI written books where like not even the author is a real person. It's an AI generated image. So that's where it gets scary, is when AI starts to pull from AI generated sources that aren't factual. So that is definitely a threat. Students, yes, they like you can kind of tell when something has been, just spit out by ChatGPT. It is all about the prompt. So like if they've uploaded their own writing samples and say like, hey, write this in my style of writing, it is a little bit harder to detect. And there are actually programs like ZeroGPT that you can put writing into and it'll tell you the likelihood that it has been written by AI versus a human, or it'll tell you if it's a combo. But it doesn't have good enough accuracy to be used as a, as an accusatory evidence measure, essentially. And there's actually research that has come out that says like the harm of accusing somebody of using AI is like very detrimental, especially when you don't have 100% truth or a self-confession. So what we attempt to do is we attempt to make as many of our assignments kind of AI proof, to where the students have to come and have a discussion in class, or it's on a very specific topic. And so we might actually encourage them to use ChatGPT for a part of it, but then like for an idea generation, but then they have to do the critical reasoning part of the assignment. So it's an ongoing challenge, honestly, and with the updates that happen every day, it's certainly something that we're paying close attention to.
Thank you. That's very interesting. And I was also wondering, thinking of the board, our main focus is protection of the public. If there's any threat of harm to the public of clinicians using AI to generate clinical treatment plans for certain conditions and not double checking that and just using that to intervene or treat patients.
And not just that, I don't mean to interrupt, but I wanted to add on to it. Just as far as interpreting and taking the data from testing, and that's kind of my concern, is that then the AI sort of generates the interpretations of what needs to be done, which are not that we diagnose, but I hope. Mm-hmm. But then to piggyback on what you said, Mr. Daly, about them generating the treatment plans or the goals or whatever without any real human eyes, that's my concern for the public as well.
Yeah, so I like to think about it like how we learn hand long math in school. So we have to learn the math by hand, but then we get to use calculators. But by the time we get to the point of using calculators, we still understand the long division. Now, I'm not sure I can tell you the quadratic formula, but I'm at the long division level. So the long division is essentially how, if I'm administering an assessment with somebody in an outpatient neuro rehab setting, and then I get that score and I'm writing their treatment plan, I have an understanding of what that test is telling me. Now, if there is a system set up that has the latest evidence loaded into it and it's able to make recommendations, but it's not actually writing the treatment plan, that could actually be helpful, because a lot of clinicians can fall into that, you know, oh, I'm going to do what I've always done, or this is the equipment my clinic has, or that type of thing, as individualized as we do like to make it. There is just that kind of repetition that can happen. And so this would have the potential to kind of help clinicians think further along, especially since there isn't a lot of evidence about the dosage of therapy in terms of frequency, duration, and that's a whole other conversation. But yes, I agree with you. There is a risk to basically getting these cookie cutter treatment plans. And that's something that we talk with our students about that, but that's going to continue to have to be a conversation to make sure that is not being done.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. Very interesting discussion.
Oh, yes, Mr. Daly, I know you have a tech interest as well.
Dr. Carpenter, this is Sean. Do you have any references or anything that we can look into this a little bit more?
Yes. So there are books. There are actually a lot of books that are being published now. There isn't a ton with occupational therapy or physical therapy in general, physical rehab or rehabilitation. I think it's because the companies are still in that, like they look at the revenue sources, and I don't know if they realize, they just think of physicians and diagnostics. That's what I have seen the most of. But I have, a couple of really great podcasts, a couple of great books. And then Sarah Lyon is an occupational therapist. She owns OT Potential. She's really interested in this. And so she has had several, she has a podcast that is qualifies for AOTA continuing education. And so she has had several of the leaders, not all of them are occupational therapists. Some of them are data scientists, but she has had several of them on her podcast. And so the articles are listed on her website. So Ms. Ganatra, if I email you some resources, is that the best way to disseminate that to the board?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I have one more question, Dr. Carpenter. Do companies have code of conduct agreements that practitioners have to sign to say they will not generate treatment plans from, you know, ChatGPT, Copilot, any other AI tool, generative AI tool?
That's a really good question. And I'm afraid I don't quite have the information to speak to that, because I am full-time at the university, but then clinically I work for an early intervention company. So we use a documentation system that doesn't have any AI integration yet. So I'm afraid I can't speak to that, but it's certainly something to look into.
Okay, thank you.
All right, that was a great question.
Yeah.
Dr. Carpenter, if new information continues to come through, would you be willing or interested to join us again, or could you just notify me?
Definitely. Yep. There's two like electronic health records that are under development that could potentially be like used by rehab, and it'll, you know, I don't know where Epic and Cerner, like the two biggest EHRs, are with their integration, or if WebPT is thinking about doing anything. But yes, I'm following this closely because I am really interested, and I want it to be ethical and helpful rather than go down the dark side with it. So yes, I consider me at your disposal.
Thank you.
I have one more question for you there. As a board, what would you, any recommendations of what we should be aware of how it might affect the board in dealing with any future issues that might be coming?
Well, I could see, you know, it sounds like documentation is something that does come up again with the board at times. So just that misdocumenting or not documenting appropriately for clients, that would be something that the board might have to look at with a practitioner at some point. I think the current ethics still ring true and apply to practitioners using AI tools. So I think that when it's a matter of people understanding, oh, those codes of ethics, the codes of conduct, they apply to my engagement with AI as well. So there's a little bit of education that's going to have to happen on the practitioner side. And, you know, the tools that are out there. So if you've gone to your health provider recently, if they are using any type of AI, like ambient scribing or anything like that, they do have to disclose that to you. So like I see one of my practitioners via telehealth, and they had to disclose to me when they started using an ambient scribe. So it would just, I think it's understanding for practitioners that the language that's already in the statutes and rules applies to AI as well.
That's fascinating. I think Dr. Williams, you brought up a question I was actually going to ask, but I was curious, I mean, if it affects like medical necessity documentation in that way, if there's AI coming out, or if that's part of what you were describing for insurance company, and if that's something.
So fascinating you mentioned insurance companies. They are already using AI to help them do claim denials because they can go through claims so much faster. So they're already using like as reviewers, because you can program a GPT to pick up on language, anything you want that's written text.
Wow. It's fascinating.
So actually AI, because we can pull from so many resources, could actually help generate better justifications for medical necessity, I think. Just the language that we don't always have in the moment.
Makes sense. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You can talk about it for a long time, but I know you all have a lot of other agenda items as well.
No, we appreciate your passion. Thank you for joining us today.
Okay. Hey.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Okay, and I will move on to 10B, which is our AAG. If you can please provide us with a training regarding calls to the public. And it's just a brief discussion, and if there's questions, I picked a topic. If the board members in the future would like a different topic or something additional, please send me a message and we can ask Mr. Harris to follow up on.
And this is kind of a follow-up, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, of our conversation a few board meetings ago regarding moving the placement of the call to public. And I'll begin with something that I shared with you, you know, at that time, and that the call to public is discretionary. The open meeting laws do not require state agencies to have a call to public on their agenda. But if you do, there's certain rules, if you will, or parameters that we must follow. And those are generally read by the chairperson when there is the call to public. And you often hear Shana reiterate that when people address the board. And the idea of the call to public is to give anybody the opportunity to address the board regarding anything that you have jurisdiction over. You know, if you don't have jurisdiction over something, you do not have to hear from that individual. But
I would ask, and I, you know, it doesn't really come up before us, but I would encourage a broad interpretation of what we have jurisdiction over as it relates to the call to public, primarily because we're just giving an opportunity, a member of the public, a member of our community, an opportunity to express something. With that said, though, our hands are kind of tied what we can do, certainly what we can do at this meeting. If it's an agenda item, we give the parties the opportunity to address you in real time when their matters call. So it's not something that would typically be appropriate for the call to public discussion. With a call to public discussion that moves you, though, to, you know, take some sort of action, your action would be to either ask staff to look into it, whatever that it is, or to ask that it be placed on a future agenda item so that you can collectively engage in a discussion and take appropriate action if action is appropriate. I think the only other thing that I would like to, well, two things. You know, we always circle back to the agenda, and the agenda is our program. And if it's not on the agenda, or if it's not properly worded on the agenda, we can't do it, right? And so that's why the call to public is also very helpful, because if we deviate in any way, the best things that we can do is just to bring it back, you know? And that's something that's always an option and something that we should always, you know, keep in mind. If you think that the topic or the issue warrants it. And then lastly, we have a civility policy. We have a civility policy immediately upon, you know, calling the board into session. We treat people with respect, and you have every right to expect that that will be reciprocated. That's not to say that people can't get emotional, to an extent, again, there should be some latitude provided. But if somebody is just not being appropriate, not engaging in productive communication, after asking them to, you know, modify, if they don't, the call to public doesn't give anybody the right to just come up and be abusive. And with that said, if any particular board member is the subject of some comments, that individual board member does have the opportunity to respond to those comments, not to engage in a conversation back and forth with the, you know, individual addressing the board, but merely just to put their response on the record so that it's preserved, just like the public comments will be preserved in the administrative record. I'm sure there's probably something I'm missing about the call to public. But most importantly, it's an essence of professional courtesy. You know, it's not a requirement. Some of your colleague boards have called the public, others don't. Yeah. Any questions?
One quick question, Mr. Harris. If somebody was displaying inappropriate behavior or communication, what would be the proper way to terminate that?
Well, the first is, you know, the first suggestion is when you're given an opportunity to call that to their attention, you know, and if for some reason they don't present you that opportunity or afford you that opportunity, I would suggest that we recess the meeting, and then either Shane or myself, you as the chair, would have a conversation or try to have a conversation with that individual also simultaneously, if it really escalates, we do have security right outside that we would be able to, you know, bring into the situation to assist. The thing that, you know, in all these situations, unfortunately, we're very blessed with our stakeholders. But with that said, in that unlikely event that something like that would occur, I would just ask that we use our tools as good good people and just try to treat them as if we'd want to be treated and, you know, not do anything to escalate, but rather to de-escalate. And that's by remaining calm and not trying to engage them with in responding to everything that they say. Thank you. That's a tricky one, and it's a help one that we have to be able to face.
Thank you,
Sarah.
Okay, and then we'll move on to 10C, which is out-of-state initial applications and reporting processes and or timeframes regarding fingerprint clearance cards. So this is a hybrid agenda item that was asked at the last board meeting, I think, by Donald and by Mr. Williams. Ms. Selman did put together a quick summary in regards to some of the common things that we see for out-of-state initial applications and also fingerprint clearance cards. I wanted to at least give Ms. Donald and Mr. Williams the opportunity if there was any other questions in regards to the agenda item, or if you just wanted to hear some sort of summary as to what might be helpful.
No, I just wanted to hear a summary only because we've been hearing repeatedly about, especially out-of-state. And I thought, well, you never know if we're only hearing the very few, or if there was really a bigger issue that was geared or targeted, for lack of a better word, to the out-of-state just because there was a glitch in the system or whatever. That's really what I wanted to know. So thank you for taking your time to put this together. I know it was one more thing asked.
No problem. I'm happy because being able to present it here will not only help you guys understand, but the public understand a little bit more as to why they're struggling, because maybe they don't understand why they're struggling because they didn't have the struggle before. So beneficial to all. Okay. So the most challenging aspect of the application process for individuals living out of state is obtaining the Arizona Department of Public Safety fingerprint clearance card. That is just primarily because it's in this state. If you're out of this state, it's just rather difficult. Although the following applications share similarities, each has unique challenges that our licensee population often faces. For the initial application for licensure by examination, most applicants struggle with obtaining the fingerprint clearance card, providing professional recommendations with wet signatures or manual signatures, submitting other required license details, securing their score transfer from NBCOT, and outlining their employment as it relates to the profession. Any questions on that part? Wonderful. For applicants or applications for licensure by universal license recognition, many applicants find it difficult to provide proof of established Arizona residency and obtain the Arizona fingerprint clearance card and submit other license details and clarify their employment as it relates to the profession. So again, some of those are similar or the exact same. For the limited license applications, applicants typically face challenges in providing official transcripts, obtaining the fingerprint clearance card, securing a notarized direct supervision agreement form, and notifying the board when they have taken their NBCOT exams. So most of the applications have the same similar thing. The common factor is the fingerprint clearance card. We've seen that when you don't live here, it's harder to jump through the hoops. We have also seen that there are a couple different ways to handle that process. DPS lets you handle the process. They have a process where they handle part, you handle part. And then there's the process where they give you everything and you send everything back and they handle everything. So if the individual chooses their own process, it might be a little bit more difficult. best recommendation is to go with DPS process and ask them all their questions and refer back to DPS repeatedly, because the board doesn't facilitate the DPS process. Okay, for the wet signatures or manual signatures on your professional recommendations, a lot of times the population will send the form to who they want to sign it, and they don't give them direction on needing a manual or wet signature. So they'll type it out and use Adobe, and then not have a digital signature on it. And we have to ask for a different type of signature so that it's valid.
Yes. So a digital signature is valid.
A digital signature is valid with a timestamp.
Okay.
So if the timestamp is not present, cannot validate the digital signature. So best recommendation there, leave all the parameters on so that it shows the timestamp. And then the score transfer for NBCOT versus the verification of certification. The verification of certification does tell us that you took the exam, but it doesn't tell us how many times you failed or if you passed. We need to know that. So the score transfer is the document you want to give us. Any other questions or comments, concerns? I can answer those.
No, it makes sense. I see all. Can you help with the moving pieces part? So it does make a little sense where if there's a breakdown, somebody doesn't quite get it.
And then they might need deficiency notice for that item, and then they have to jump through whatever hoops necessary to complete that and get that to us. That does sometimes elongate the time frame. However, even though it's elongated that time frame, and they're communicative, we can still keep moving forward in that application process.
Thank you.
Okay, then I will move on to 10D, which is professional recommendations regarding good moral character, which I know we touched upon that on the initial application, but now we're going to flip the script a bit because in our statute, and Mr. Harris can probably guide me a bit better, they've removed the good moral character requirement. As in, you know, reviewing applications, it's not something that we as boards can consider. However, our rules still require the two professional recommendation forms from a healthcare provider. And so we've been following our rules. However, recently we are trying to do kind of a reorg of our processes. And so we're bringing it before the board because of the conflict of our statute not matching our rules. And I know my predecessor, Ms. Whiteford, attempted to get this removed, I believe, back in 2015. And there was a rule moratorium in place for quite some time since then. So we did discuss these things at the committee, our subcommittee. And so we're starting the process of going through the rule revisions. And therefore, then, you know, this is still something that's not been changed, but our statute doesn't allow access, the statute itself, to review good moral character. And so we're bringing it before the board to make the determination to remove that requirement from our initial application process, since it isn't statutorily found. Did I make it, Mr. Harris?
You know, just as Shanna just articulated, and this isn't unique to our board, the legislature a number of years ago removed good moral character from all the licensed professional licensing boards. However, the legislation didn't redact, that's not the right word I'm thinking of, but didn't eliminate any regulations related to the prior enforcement of how do you establish, how does one go about establishing good moral character, what does that look like? And that's, appropriate for the regulation. So if many agencies like ours had regulations on what you would need to submit to establish that you meet the minimum requirements as it relates to good moral character. This is more of an administrative. We no longer have the statutory authority to ask, about one's moral character. So the letters of reference and things of that nature would automatically follow. They can't be used and then review of the application process because we no longer have the statutory authority. Did I just confuse everybody here?
No, but it's interesting. So we have been following, asking for the just totally spaced it. The recommendations are to fulfill our rule requirement. But we really, that was just, the statute went away a long time ago.
Not a long time ago, but
recently-ish.
Yeah. It's more of a, I think, an administrative.
So now we can change the rule. Or are allowed to for those
rules need to be updated, and in that exercise, they would be removed. Those rules would be removed.
That's a process. It's something where I have to go before the legislators and go through on to get those updated. And so it's a, we have to open up, I think, for public comment. And
it's quite an exercise, and it's something that, you know, doesn't happen. It's not quick. There's a process that's set forth in statute, and typically I think it runs anywhere from 6 months to a year, depending upon, you know, how controversial a rule package is. If all we're doing is eliminating rules, that would go pretty quickly because of the...
So in the interim, we could remove, we could kind of make a motion to remove that, or?
It wouldn't be to remove it. It would be that, you know, we should no longer be asking questions that we don't have the statutory authority to ask as part of the application process.
And a vote is necessary.
I think it's nice.
So then it would be removed from the application process after it's removed from the rules.
That's going to take time. Basically, I think what Shane has asked is that, hey, we don't have the authority to do this anymore, even though our rule says it. But our rule only said it because we had the statutory authority in the past. Since we don't have it, we shouldn't be doing it. So can we move to direct staff no longer to ask for these because we legally can't?
Yes.
I should have just let you know.
Thank you.
You should have been a word count.
125.
For the entire meeting.
No, I wouldn't
do that. That's when you go, oh, I just should have
So would a motion like this suffice? I move to direct board staff to eliminate the good moral character / reference letter requirement from the initial licensure application.
Oh, I'll second that.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Christopher Daly.
Aye.
Sean Williams.
Aye.
Charlene Marr.
Aye.
Shelley Donald.
Aye.
Michael Corrente. I think we lost Mr. Corrente. I don't know if he jumped off. No, he's not on the meeting. Cool. He's no longer available to vote.
Do we need to contact him or reach back out, or
would you mind?
Okay.
I think we can probably see the minutes and determine from there.
Since we still have quorum, can we just consider him absent?
Thank you.
Technically, is that motion passes by a majority? Or
will be fine.
Motion passes by my majority.
Thank you. Yes.
Oh, that's right.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, then I will move on to 10E, which is bills to watch. So I started up at the last board meeting that I've been placing bills because we're in legislative session. I've been placing bills for board members to review. And we, I think, wrote it on to last meeting. But I brought them back to the board specifically for vote. The remainder of them can be just an inform for you to take a look at your leisure. And if you find there's one that you'd like to be re-reviewed at the board for a vote for us to take a stance on, please bring that back up to me and I can bring it to the board. Otherwise, I'll continue to keep this as a standing agenda item just to monitor. And we dropped all the goals in the folder as well. So the one specifically that may require reconsideration, it's up to the board, is the agenda item one, which is SB 1235. So this item was recently updated since our last discussion, and it's in the material that there was an email from Senator Schaff and her team that demonstrates that they took into account the feedback that they have with us in the previous meeting, the executive directors have met, and have revised the bill. And so I provided the revised bill in the folder as well, which, you know, I can go over, or we can, if you have questions in terms of what was updated. But she's asking the boards to review the updated bill and consider registering as neutral. And then to remind the board, at its last meeting, the board voted in opposition of this bill. And this bill specifically was to change the structure of professional and public members. So it was specifically to change the three professional and two public members to three public members and two professional members, as well as some other things in it. They've now since changed that revision to now keep the two public members, but to have two public members that are, I believe the term was retired or no longer practicing, as a consideration for our board composition. And then the one professional member who was in practice for so many years. So take a look at it. If there appears to be a discussion we can have, or if you would like to decide not to, to review it again for a vote.
So it would be, because they wanted to do, they recommended three non-professional members and two professional members. And now they're changing that to still with three professional members or not?
I'll read it. Just to,
would you think
that
I didn't get
you last night? No, that's okay. I know. It's quite a bit of material. So it states here that it's just changing what is currently in our statute, which states two members who have never had their license revoked or suspended, or have voluntarily surrendered their license in lieu of suspension or revocation, and who are former licensees who are retired from the practice of occupational therapy in this state, or who have a valid license to practice occupational therapy and are not currently practicing. And then it states one member who has at least 3 years of experience in occupational therapy or teaching in an accredited occupational therapy education program in this state immediately before appointment, and who is licensed under this chapter. And it does state prior to this, it says, it doesn't change this the part where it states public members. So it still states two persons who are not engaged directly or indirectly in the provision of healthcare services to serve as a public member. And they're also turning the process to state if the governor fails to fill a public member vacancy within 1 year after the position becomes vacant, the board may fill the public member position by a majority vote. And if the Senate fails to confirm or reject an appointee within 1 year after the governor's appointment, the appointee is deemed confirmed. So we're currently not a Senate confirmed board. However, I think this bill is looking to change that to ensure that all are Senate confirmed. It's what the discussion was, but it has to reopen. And of course, this is a proposal. I think it passed in the Senate already, if I'm not mistaken, and I think it's before the House or something like that.
there's so much going on.
So the re-revision will still be red, or is there some other color?
The blue is the revision.
The red is the redaction.
Like the removing the message, and then the blue is the actual revision of it. And everything in black is what's already standing for me.
Feel
free to, if there's a potential that there's something that we need to act quickly on, I'm happy to schedule a special meeting if they want to vote and if we need to vote in order to keep our stance. But the composition process of piece has changed a bit since the last discussion, so they're not moving to a three public, they're staying to two public. Any other questions, or does anybody want to eventually move to vote, or just to stay where we're at? Which right now we're in opposition to the bill.
I think I need to look at this, because if we're opposing it, I need to look at this. Sorry.
That's okay. No, don't be. It's okay to continue a matter.
Is it urgent? Is it a time constraint?
It's not at this time, but I have to watch for the bill. Where the bill is in the status of, to see.
You know, and as Shayna said, if there's ever an ask of Shayna that would require more direction, she would reach out and try to schedule a special board meeting just for that.
Correct. So if there's no further discussion, I'll move forward. Feel free to look at those at your leisure. I will move on then to 10F, which is Chairperson's Report. So Mr. Daly, I'll pass it over to you.
All right. Ms. Ganache, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I unfortunately I missed about three quarters of that meeting.
Right.
Did you have a chance to attend? And I was just curious is there anything we should have top of mind? And that can be the compact update.
Yes, actually. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
But I'm glad that you asked. So I did get to attend the meeting recently for the compact commission. And in it, it seems that they're ready to start working with the states to get everything ready to get going. And actually, I've been in communication with Amanda Perry as well, who is leading the forefront of leading this. And she's asking us as a board when we would be ready to start this process. We answered some questions in regards to how we would like to provide data to them. And I mentioned that anything at the minimal that we may provide, since it's information that is only required that we would send. And that's because, those who would like to elect into the compact would be the ones that we would provide the information for. So that's something I indicated. And then I was followed up with the question of when the board would be able to start the process. And so after further review of what we have on our plates with the audit and all of the other things involved, we plan to let Amanda know that we would like to determine where we're at with the other items, and then we can start our process with the compact. And I don't know what that will entail. But I do know that they are starting, they're underway with getting all the boards, all the state boards together to get all those things. And some of those things to be reviewed are fees, because the board is asked of how we would like to assess the fee, for instance, how much, and that's something that we would need to make a determination on and determine the logistics around. And keeping in mind that typically with how the contact commission goes, and from my understanding, and Mr. Daly, please include anything as well. It's someone who is coming from another state that's part of the compact, being able to be licensed in our state, and our state licensees being able to go to other states in as part of the compact and their requirements. And of course, there's the FBI requirements of the background checks, of which I believe, and this is clarification I need to get from Amanda Perry, if we do fingerprint clearance cards, we're part of that process, but we don't necessarily do the background checks ourselves. Department of Public Safety does the background checks, issues that individual the fingerprint clearance card. What does that mean for our state? And does that mean we can accept and also we can allow others in our state to be licensed in those states? Or something where we need to, what do we need to consider in that realm? So at least I'd like to start the conversation with Amanda and get involved with getting the meeting held so that we can decide how to go from there. So that's my thoughts. But if there's anything else, please let me know.
And just gonna try. I think that seems like the trickiest component. I think setting the fee will be a quick agenda item. We have a documented process for continuing education. That's not an issue. The only thing I was reviewing, and we don't have a jurisprudence examination, so that's easy.
Yeah.
So the one clarification I have here regarding the FBI criminal background checks is it's just specifically we don't have to have it in place, but we have to be able to at least demonstrate efforts or an existing process to conduct FBI criminal background checks, in parentheses, citation in legislation. I don't know what that is. In any case, so that would include applying for an ORI, an originating agency number, through the state agency which conducts FBI criminal background checks, including the consideration to draft legislation that allows for FBI's criminal background checks for licensure purposes in your OT Practice Act.
Okay. And that sounds familiar with the survey I took from them, I think it was maybe a few months ago, where they asked us where we were at. They asked all states where we're at with background checks and what is our process, and we did indicate that we don't do them ourselves, but that, you know, the DPS does. I wonder if that's something that I need to bring up as to the OIR.
I think so.
Yeah. So
thank you, Ms. Bailey. Yes, and the one part of that meeting I did catch is this. There was a lot of questions around this particular piece, and the answer regarding who can participate in the compact. If we don't have that FBI CBC in place, our Arizona OTs cannot participate in the compact. And also, other state compact members cannot come to Arizona. I thought we would still be able to take right. people, so we would be excluded from accepting or having our therapist being able to participate in it. We'd be excluded entirely.
Thank you for confirming, and I wonder why that was structured that way, and I say that because there were, and I'm asking you, but not your own, you wouldn't necessarily, just more of a thought. Other executive directors I've spoken with that are a part of the compacts for their own professional boards, but that also follow along the lines of the fingerprint clearance credits for their statutes and rules in Arizona, are able to have their, I think it was, accept the licensees, other licensees, but not necessarily have their licensees be accepted in other states. And so I wondered if that was something that we, but it sounds like that's something that they're not considering as part of us being part of the fingerprint clearance card process.
I was surprised by that as well.
Yes, yes. So what I'll do is I'll set up a meeting with Ms. Amanda Perry just to determine what are we to do in terms of those tasks.
Okay.
And I agree, I think that's going to be your biggest barrier in regards to this process. So
do other state boards do their own background checks? Do you know?
I think it's like
depends. We can't be the only ones that we don't really have any control over that. So
yeah, and that's what I mean. In this state, I know there's a land courts that are part of the fingerprint claims card as per the legislative push that has recently occurred to bring many boards to require fingerprint clearance cards only. And so we're not the only board in this state, but other states, they have their own, you know, legislation. And, so it's a really good question. We'd probably have to review. And it sounds like a lot of the other boards must have something in place to be a part of the compact. So I don't know how many states are now enacted as part of
this. I think there's 31.
31, okay. Okay. So yeah, these are good points.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, then I will move on to 10G, which is Executive Director's Report under Item 1, Sunset Audit. So I know everyone's aware that it's underway, the Sunset Audit, and it feels like almost every day we have an accident. I did want to shout out my team. They are fantastic and have been pivoting because it is not easy. We're in the middle of daily business tasks, and we are requested to drop everything and get what they need, complaint files, etc. So it's American. Thank you both of you as well.
Thank you.
And so yeah, we underwent some interviews with the auditors individually together. We also have been putting together all the materials they're asking us for. So not only are they asking us to present the materials, but also to input into their materials their questions and whatnot. So we know that it's going to continue to be quite a bit of a caseload, but we're managing it as best as we can. In that regard, though, that of course, considering the fact that also we're still in the process of training, and what I mean by that is we have our new investigator, but still we do training in order to ensure that, you know, she feels competent in her role. And then as well as ensuring that we train our licensing specialist who's been helping with our applications. So that does take time. So considering that, you know, well, there's applications in queue, and sometimes things are sent to me and then they're caught. And so we go back and we review. But that's the continuum I was mentioning, where if an item goes into a pending final approval to me for approval, and then I'm the secondary level of approval and I catch something that was missed, we push it back into deficiency to ensure that that is received. So keeping in mind that the board is doing the best to get to every application in a timely manner for the individual. You know, timely for us as the board is always there, but I understand people want to be licensed as soon as possible. But that we are working in a good time frame. So, yeah. So I think we're, I know for certain that we are in our rush of renewals currently. Like, we have quite a few that have gone through. This is renewal season again. So right now we have 60 deficient renewals, and I believe 72 in submitted, and then we have 137 in pending final approval. So those ones, I think we were at 280 prior to the board meeting, so we had to get through quite a bit and still going through. And I believe we're about a month out approximately from someone who submitted their application to us reviewing it and approving it. Of course, that's a fluctuation, but you know, there's quite a bit out there that we're going through. We have 17 deficient initial applications, and we have 47 in pending final approval. And I believe we have approximately 10 or 15 submitted. And then for reinstatements, there aren't any in submitted. There's only 3 in deficient, and there's 3 in pending final approval. So as we start to get more resources back to our normal duty, we can start to do that, start to shrink again. So that being said, on top of the audit, we're also doing weekly meetings with Sentia. This is all in the reins, of course. But the thing is that we have to, because we're going to lose the resources by the end of the month, I'm hearing, from our teams. So they're targeting it right now and getting it handled. So what I mean by that is they're addressing all of the issues that we were facing for almost a year now, and head on. Like when the issue is addressed, we review it. We work with our third-party developer, who then helps us to ensure that everything was properly configured. And then we tell Fentia this one was good to go. And so we've been meeting weekly, 2 to 3 times a week, an hour at a time, to discuss those things. And I've been absorbing most of that, those meetings, because my staff, I want them to continue to work. I've been able to pull in the settlement at Lester Berry, but so that does take some time for me as well. So I just kind of wanted to give the idea of what the board does, since it's quite a bit these days. Like I said, I think with getting the things for the auditors, that'll just free up some more time for board business and whatnot. So, any questions or anything on staff activities? Let's go move on then. Oh, and if I actually can ask, I'd like to schedule the subcommittee meeting. And I wondered if I can ask, and I think it's Ms. Marks and Ms. Donald, what your availability is. I know your availability is Donald, but maybe I can help coordinate. Okay.
What are you looking at?
So really we can, let's see. I can just share that. March is almost over, but I mean, we've got the next few weeks, and then April is a bit more free for us. We do have the Athletic Training Board of Sister Agencies meeting the beginning of April. I probably would recommend that might not be easy for us. So if we can look at like April 14th, the week of, or April 21st.
I'm free April 14th.
And any day that week, Mr. Harrison can ask for your.
Well, it's probably a later after the 15th tax day. I hope to be finished. But probably after the 15th.
Understood.
Except for the 18th.
Okay. So potentially 16th or 17th in that time frame.
Yes. Would we, what time are we?
It's up to you.
Whatever.
We can schedule any time.
Okay.
Pending Mr. Harris's availability.
In person?
We could do in person if that's something. Virtual might be a bit more convenient.
I'm always good for one trip. So the 16th is good. The 17th is good. I think my preference would be the 16th.
Okay.
But, you know.
Yeah, I'm good with the 16th as well.
Okay. And I can follow up.
I'm available on the 16th. So I think that's fine.
Okay, the 16th and the 6th. And the different times consideration.
If we're going to meet in person, I'll ask for a little earlier.
The more traffic is next
week. Oh, so.
I would think any time, again, thinking of traffic, I mean, I don't really care, but if we could do maybe 10 or later,
that looks okay.
Fantastic. And I think it's no more than a 2 hour time.
Okay. Frame.
So 10 to maybe not 16.
Thank you very much.
Where would that be? Well, you'll let us.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Great. Really appreciate that. Yes. Fantastic. And to remind us of the subcommittee meeting for the disciplinary matrix. Okay, then I will move on to 10G2, which is financial review. I did drop in the report. There's nothing new in terms of financial review. We're still on the black. And as we continue to go month by month, we'll update the report and let us know if you have any questions. And then I'll go to 10G4, which is statistics. And I think I jumped out of order, but I did do review of recent board staff activities, so I apologize, I missed two. And then 4 is statistics. So under item 1, we have 4 out-of-state telehealth registrations. And under item 2, we have 4,706 current active licensees, of which 3,270 are occupational therapists, 1,435 are occupational therapy assistants, and we have 1 occupational therapy assistant limited licensee. Other questions? I'll pass it off to you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Scott. Moving on to agenda item 11, agenda items for next meeting. Do we have 10 agenda items? Or AP training.
Oh, now that's a mission.
I didn't come up with something.
All right. right, hearing no agenda items to discuss, moving on to agenda item 12, adjournment. Is there any other discussion? Hearing no other discussion, I move to adjourn our meeting at 4:07 p.m.
I second that.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Christopher Daly.
Aye.
Sean Williams.
Aye.
Charlie Marr.
Aye.
Shelley Donald.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Meeting adjourned.